just get your ass kicked.
Broadcasting nationally, local FM and from St. John, New Brunswick, as a part of the 16th annual Homelessness Marathon. The project of the Homelessness Marathon is to take media, which almost always has been mired in exclusivity and inequitably access, and we use our resources to center the voices of those who deal with homelessness. This is in hopes that we can work towards making media wholly accessible and that so we can have frank conversations about poverty, housing, addiction, and other factors of utmost importance from people who are affected the most by these issues. Due to this, stations across Canada joined forces for simultaneously broadcast event, with stations producing special programming and taking their equipment out of the station to broadcast across Canada. Now, this marathon began in Geneva, New York in 1998, 13 years ago it migrated to Canada, with the CKUT hosting the marathon out of Montreal's McGill University. Last year, it was the first year the marathon was hosted in BC, CVIL, Abbotsford taking charge. This year, the broadcast is hosted out of local FM in St. John, New Brunswick. CITR will be broadcasting the Homelessness Marathon intermittently throughout the following day. But if you want the full 13-plus hours, make sure you tune in into local FM stream at localfm.ca. This year, there are 11 participating stations and 13 plus hours of programming, so there'll be plenty of time within the next day to check out podcasts for the live program. We'll also be available on local FM soon if you are unable to tune in live. We are currently broadcasting from...
Sorry, we ran into some technical difficulties. We're actually going to need to start from the top. Okay. People listening now, you're tuned into CITR 101.9 FM, getting things into place. We're joined by Desi Nair, host of the CITR Accessibility Committee, and we're just going to run through our intro one more time. Thank you.
Okay, right from the top. Now, if you heard John, you are listening to 101.9 CITR FM, broadcasting live on the unceded Coast Salish territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. We are broadcasting nationally through local FM in St. John, New Brunswick, as a part of the 16th annual Homelessness Marathon. The project of the Homelessness Marathon is to take media, which has almost always been mired in exclusivity and equitable access, and to use our resources to center the voices of those who deal with homelessness. This is in hopes that we can work towards making media wholly accessible, and that we can have a frank and open conversation about poverty, housing, addiction, and other factors of utmost importance from the people who are affected the most by these issues. Now, to do this, stations across Canada joined forces simultaneously to broadcast the event, with stations producing local programming and taking in their equipment out of the station and to broadcast across Canada. Now, this marathon began in Geneva in 1998, almost 13 years ago. It migrated to Canada with CKUT hosting the marathon out of Montreal's McGill University. Last year, it was the first year the marathon was hosted in BC, CIVL in Abbotsford taking charge. This year, the broadcast is hosted out of local FM in St. John, New Brunswick. CITR will be broadcasting the Homelessness Marathon intermittently throughout the following day. But if you want the full 13-plus hours, make sure you tune into local FM stream at localfm.ca. This year, there are 11 participating stations and 13-plus hours of programming, so there'll be plenty of time within the next day to check it out. Podcasts for the program will also be available on Local FM soon, so if you're unable to tune in live, you can tune in there. We are currently broadcasting from Megaphone Magazine, which is an organization with more than 40 vendors. Many of the vendors struggle from various barriers, including poverty, homelessness, addiction, and the Megaphone vendor model gives its employees a sense of autonomy, reliable labor, and a voice in the community. We'll be talking to a series of vendors throughout the following hour. So, I have here with me, can you introduce yourself?
My name is Mark Irvine. I'm a vendor here at the Megaphone Street Paper. And I also volunteer at a senior center in the downtown east side.
Nice. And why did you come down to choose here and talk with us for this homeless marathon?
I was invited, and I feel that I have some input that would be relevant to the issues that you're raising.
Oh, awesome. Was there anything in particular you wanted to start with in terms of issues you wanted to raise?
The first would be homelessness.
Right.
I recently became homeless due to an illness that affected my ability to keep touch with the organizations like welfare. And then I made the transition from welfare to pension. So I messed that up a bit, and what the end result was, I hadn't been paying rent for 7 months, and that eventually forced my eviction from the place where I was living. So I've been homeless for about 3 weeks, but I found lodgings in the London Hotel, which is a BC housing organization. And I'll be there for the foreseeable future until I can get an apartment.
Okay. And how did you come into joining the Megaphone Magazine team as a vendor?
I was invited. I was first a vendor for the Pivot Hope and Shadows calendar.
I said, how's it been so far being a vendor?
When I'm healthy, it's excellent. I don't make a living at it, but I supplement my pension with it, and that allows me to go to other events that I normally wouldn't be able to make it to.
Nice. And do you originally come from the downtown east side, or?
I was born to the downtown east side.
Oh, okay. And has, in terms of being a part of Megaphone Magazine and then being from the downtown east side, has that offered you kind of an interesting perspective into being a vendor?
Not so much being a vendor. I don't get a lot of questions with respect to the downtown east side and my involvement in it. Questions pertain more to the Megaphone itself.
Right.
The sales and who I meet on the street.
Right.
So that is more the focus.
Okay. And I guess you touched on this before. So people often don't think about why people are stuck in homelessness. What do you think are some of the reasons that get overlooked the most?
A lack of communication between those of us who are experiencing the problem and the powers that be out there, who at times are don't understand the situation well enough to be able to deal with us. They follow protocols which handcuff them,
right.
And that affects us in the long run. I feel if they could have more power, like the people that I was involved with when I was on welfare, if they had been given more power to be independent and handle our cases independently, rather than throwing protocol at us every time an issue arises, I think that would go a long way to ridding us of a lot of the problems we are experiencing here in the downtown East Side.
And you said, so you grew up on the downtown East Side, you're from here. Have you seen, like, in terms of changes you've noticed or issues that have come up, like, what have you noticed since as you were growing up?
There have been many, many changes over the years, but the greatest and most significant change that I've witnessed was Expo 86.
How so?
I feel that it opened the floodgates for people to come in, live in our city, and I figured that there wasn't enough preparation in terms of the educational system, which became so overburdened, the ability of schools to teach our children was significantly affected, and not in a good way. I say this because my daughter grew up in a time when the immigration was just beginning to reach flood proportions. So her education really was affected by that. The system had to slow itself down so that new people coming into the country would be able to learn
Keep
along
them.
With
yep.
us.
Mm-hmm. Right, and then as well, I guess, so how long have you been involved with Megaphone then?
Oh, not that long. I think this is my fourth year with Megaphone.
Awesome, that's a while. What, what are some of the reasons that you continue to stay? How have you found that it's helped you in a sense?
Well, I came over from Pivot.
Right,
the
right.
Open Shadows Calendar Project.
Right.
So I was already a vendor, so the transition was almost natural.
Right, right.
And so when I was invited by Megaphone, I said, okay, another project that can help me grow and develop in some ways.
Right.
And it's a project that also keeps me out of trouble because I am an alcoholic and an addict. So when I'm out focusing on selling the Megaphone, interacting with people that I do on the street, that keeps me out of the bars, keeps me from being active as an addict, and so I value that, and I figure eventually I'll be able to maintain a focus where I don't need to have either the alcohol or the drugs, and these projects really go a long way to provide a groundwork.
Thanks so much for joining us. Is there anything you'd like to close on? Or?
Well, I could talk for hours here, but
there are other
people well,
we'll,
that are
we'll,
waiting.
We'll so. Be here. We'll be here. Right. So I'm not sure it'll make it nationally, but again, thank you so much for that.
Well, and, thank you for inviting me. It's been quite an experience.
We're just going to fade into some music, but shouldn't be no more than 30 seconds to a minute. Then we will be back with some more vendors here at Megaphone.
All right, I'm Una, and we're back with the CITR Homeless Broadcast, and we're sitting here today with another vendor from the Megaphone, and I'm going to let you introduce yourself. What was your name?
My name is Peter Thompson.
Hi, Peter.
How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Good.
Awesome. I just wanted to ask, why did you come down today to come and talk to us about the homelessness marathon or about homelessness in general?
Well, I figured that it'd be good to come down and discuss the homelessness with everybody because it's a big issue that's been happening not only here but other parts too where people are homeless and somebody should be doing something about it.
Do you have your own experience with homelessness?
I've had experience with homelessness in the past, but I have found housing. I live in the basement suite now, so.
Nice. How long have you been living in a basement suite?
About 6 years now.
Okay. So you have a real space in your heart for folks who struggle with homelessness?
That's right, because yeah. It's hard out there when the weather gets rough, it gets cold, or it's too wet. And too damp, people that live in these kind of conditions develop health issues too. Okay. And it affects not them, it affects other people too.
Yeah, totally. So when you decided to come down here and talk today, is some of your experience of being homeless inform that? What about what's been happening over the past year that has helped kind of spur you into action around coming to talk to the general public about homelessness?
Well, I think it's a pretty good idea because homelessness is like a disease where you have to find a cure for it, and to find that cure, you have to get the right people that are involved, and the ones that you have to speak to. They're the ones that really need to hear what we have to say and the ones that should be doing something about it, not just letting it, like, say we got the mayor, he said he's going to end homelessness mm-hmm. in certain periods of time. But a lot of these people, they take that for granted. They use that for an excuse to get voted in, elected. And the province, they should be doing something about it too, but I don't feel they're doing enough to help out people, like, and this should be a real big issue because it's not only here in Vancouver, but province-wide too, where people freeze to death or people get burned to death by just trying to keep warm, and I don't like that.
Mm-hmm. If you're not from the downtown east side, how did you get here?
I've lived in the downtown east side many years. I lived in the SRO rooms. I lived in many of the hotels down there. And I know what it's all about. And I walk the streets downtown east side every day. I go for breakfast or lunch at the Carnegie. And
going back to what you were saying about the folks who are either freezing or burning maybe in their tents because they're trying to keep warm and how that really impacted you, what are some things about being homeless that maybe people wouldn't think about that are barriers to doing things like getting a job or getting, you know, into sort of a more mainstream society?
Well, first of all, the province has got to reach out to help them out to get stable housing, not just temporary, like shelters or whatever. That's not going to help them because they're out of there. They have to be out of there 7 o'clock in the morning. And where are they going to go? They have nothing to eat. If they have stable housing, they have stable place. They could cook. They could clean themselves. They could be more, more what you call for themselves that they want to do. Get out and do some.
Mm-hmm. Once you found housing and you've found that you were housed regularly and you had safety around that, how did that impact the way that you were able to act in the world?
Well, it's like, you know, when you get that, you you not only think about yourselves, but you think about other people too. Mm-hmm. That is still in that situation. So you try to help them out as best as you could too, every day.
Awesome. And that brings me to Megaphone. So you have been working for Megaphone for how long?
I've been working for Megaphone for about 10 years now.
Yeah. Well, I guess in some ways Megaphone's working for you, right?
Well, yeah. We all work together.
We all work together. I love that about this place. So you've been working for 10 years, but you say you've been housed for 6. Do you think that Megaphone and working here and being part of this community helped part of that process of getting you into stable housing?
Yes, I believe so, because it is something that, we all struggle for, and something like doing Megaphone that is gives me a stable work where I could get out there every day and introduce the paper to people, and people help me out along the way too. So,
So for anyone who doesn't know what Megaphone is or how it helps, how the vendors and Megaphone work together as a community, could you just tell us a little bit about how you interact with Megaphone?
I interact with Megaphone. I sell the paper on the street every day. I introduce it to people going by. And the people that come to me, they tell other people too what I'm selling, and they'll come, they'll buy the paper, and I show them that respect, and they show me the same respect that I give them too. So
it's your daily job.
It is.
Awesome. Do you also do the Hope in the Shadows calendars in the winter? And so how does it work? You buy the magazine, and then people buy it off of you?
Yeah.
How does that rotate?
I buy the magazine for 75 cents, and it's got a $2 price tag on it. But people usually pay what they want for it.
Yeah, okay, that's great. Yeah. And you have a regular spot?
Yes.
Yeah, that's kind of like your workplace?
Yes.
Awesome, so everyone knows your name, and you have become a community member there?
Yeah, I've been welcomed there.
You've been welcome.
By a lot of people.
That's so great. So I guess my next question is, so a lot of people don't know why people are stuck in homelessness. And do you think that there's any reasons that get overlooked the most?
Well, a lot of things that I know is the rent evictions that's happening, and the rise of the rents. Like, soon as they renovate, they up the rents, and these people can't afford it. Like, if there's other people that want to come in, and big developers come in, and they're starting to push their way into the downtown east side, and once all the rents and everything going up, people get pushed out. And that's not fair to the people that's been there for years, right? And all of a sudden, they get pushed out of their place or displaced. Mm. And I don't think that's fair to anybody.
No, it sounds terrible. We're going to close up. I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts or last thoughts that you might want to share with everybody about what we've been talking about that you'd like to share with people on the air today.
I just think that this is great that this is happening, that we're doing this so that people out there will know and will take effect into wanting to help and push towards government to help people instead of pushing them aside. Like, enough is enough. They should just clear the slate, start helping these people. And, there's a lot of places downtown east side where they could build places for these people, and it's not fair to them.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, and we really appreciate you adding your voice to this project.
Okay, thank you.
We'll be right back.
Now live, I am Rachel Lau here at the Homelessness Marathon. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, and I have the pleasure here to be joined with...
James Witwicky.
James Witwicky, thank you for being here.
Witwicky.
Witwicky.
Yeah, just like the Transformers guy.
That's good to know, James. Thank you so much. So, to start off our little interview here today, I'm curious, why did you decide to come down here to talk to us for the Homelessness Marathon?
Well, because I think that myself and other vendors, Peter's a good example, we start to take ownership of the project. So when things like this come up, we want to give back in a way.
Right. And so what is it like to be able to take ownership of the project like this?
Well, I mean, over time, I've published poetry in Megaphone. I've done interviews in Megaphone. And other vendors as well. We're contributors. We have vendor profiles that are in Megaphone. So it becomes part of a community, and it becomes sometimes even a thing of like, oh, have you done one of the vendor profiles yet? Or have you been on the cover yet?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so we talk about that with each other, and we encourage each other that way. So.
Right, and it sounds like you've really become integrated with Megaphone and being able to share your experiences and your work with other people. So I'm sure you had a start in Megaphone, like you started somewhere. So how did you come to join Megaphone?
Okay, so in 2010, I was homeless, and I was living at the First United Emergency Shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a contest for Hope and Shadows, a photography contest.
Right.
And I took a picture of a window washer at the Pennsylvania Hotel that was selected to be in the top 40. So because of that, they had a contest, they had an award ceremony, they had an exhibit, and I began to interact with the Megaphone staff, and then they said, well, do you know that Megaphone also publishes poetry?
Mm.
And so I have a degree in English, and I've been writing poetry, so I started to submit poetry to Megaphone. And then that became a whole other adventure.
Wow. And so what is it like to be someone with an English degree and being able to share those things in a publication like Megaphone?
Well, it gives us an opportunity to be heard. And, I mean, Megaphone is not the only project in the Downtown East Side that gives us a unique opportunity to have our voices heard. So it's just great. It's not something I would have planned for, but
right.
The way
here
it worked out was just good for me.
Right, and it's been 7 years now, right?
That's right, yeah.
So where do you come from? Where do you call home?
Okay, so I mainly have lived in the Lower Mainland, what they call the Lower Mainland or Metro Vancouver, since 1972.
Right.
And I lived in New Westminster from 1992 to 2010. And in 2009, my wife died in New Westminster.
I'm sorry.
And I wanted to take a slightly different direction in my life. And sort of accidentally on purpose, I wound my way down to the Downtown East Side.
Accidentally on purpose. Can you tell us a little
that? I had a sense. I'd had an encounter with the Downtown East Side in 1990 because of, like, I have what they would call a dual diagnosis. I have a very serious mental illness, and I've also have a history of abusing substances. So that what was the question again?
You said that accidentally on purpose, so
in 1990 I had been homeless for a brief time and I experienced the downtown east side. And one of the things that always stuck with me about the downtown east side was the love of art and the love of poetry and the love of, you know, there's been few other places where people immediately react to poetry the way they do here. And so when that was the journey I started in 2010, I wanted to come back to this community. So I intentionally came back, but also accidentally came back because it's one of the few places that I would want to be homeless.
Right. And what makes the downtown east side a place where you want to be homeless at?
Well, the thing that attracted me to it originally was the fact that the First United shelter was a 24-hour low barrier shelter.
Okay.
And ultimately, it became impossible for them to continue that. But because it was 24 hours, you couldn't get thrown out. Mm-hmm. You could come into any shape at any time and crash there, which I did for 7 months.
Right. Yeah. So it sounds like the downtown east side, in terms of like the housing situation for you at that time, was both accessible and also the community, or not accessible. You're like kind of making a face, so I want to.
Well, I mean, the thing is that I don't, you know, being able to do 7 months at the First United Emergency Shelter is not everybody's cup of tea. There's some people that will not go, would not have gone there, period.
Right.
And also, I realized afterwards that was a very expensive 7 months in terms of you know, so it's just. You know, so in a way it was good, and in another way it was not ideal.
Right. And I'm curious, you talked a little bit about how the downtown east side has this appreciation for art and poetry, correct? And in what ways have you seen that when you were in the community?
Okay, well, the thing that struck me when I first started working with Megaphone was the quality of the people that were participating. And I didn't really know where they had come from or who they were, but I mean, I was impressed by that. And Megaphone is not the only organization. Thursday's Writing Collective has people from all over, like Madeline Tien was a guest writer at the Thursday's Writing Collective.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's people from all different walks that come to the downtown east side looking for opportunities to engage with the people in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that makes it maybe unique in the world, that so many people have are interested in accessing this community and interacting with us. And for me, that's just been great. It's just been a ride for me. So.
Yeah, and it sounds like a really wholesome community to be a part of.
That's right.
So more on the topic of homelessness, people don't think about why folks are stuck in homelessness. So what do you think are some of the reasons that often get overlooked by people who aren't part of this community?
Well, for example, I can talk about my own experience of being in supported housing, which is a place owned by the Sanford Housing Society and managed by PHS Community Services. Those kind of supportive housing that can be low barrier and that you have supports and that you have maybe one meal a day and things like that, right, are a good way to prevent people with dual diagnosis from being tossed back into the community, because if you're mentally ill and you become unstable, and that happens to a lot of people, it hasn't happened to me, but you become unstable and you do something in most kinds of housing, they'll just evict you. Supported housing is an entirely different concept, and it's frankly a little bit expensive, but it's the best way to ensure that people with ongoing mental health problems or substance problems get the kind of support that they need to be stable in housing long term.
Thank you for sharing that. This concludes our interview. So I'm wondering, James, if there are any last words you want to leave with folks who are listening here at the broadcast today.
Well, I think that, you know, one of the reasons why so many people try to engage with our neighborhood is that they understand that the standard typical media portrayal, even favorable media portrayal, always begins with the idea that it's Canada's poorest postal code and how many people have died of an overdose. But if people from outside the community want to engage with the community and really try and figure out what's going on here, I think they'll see a side that's much different and that needs to be preserved, because like Peter said, we can't stand up against the onslaught of people that are certainly good people, students and international students and people visiting at the new hospital, mm-hmm. but that are willing to pay way more than we could pay for those small units.
Thank you, James. You are listening to 101.9 CITR FM. You are joining us back at the Homelessness Marathon. And we are in Megaphone Studios in the Downtown East Side. And I am joined by...
by Davin Bhutang.
Awesome. So you're kind of involved with Megaphone. Can you tell us a little bit about how you're involved, how long you've been involved?
Right. So technically what I am, I'm more focused into the Hope and Shadows.
Okay. And what's that?
That's through that. It's the calendars.
Oh, awesome.
That they have, yeah. Actually, my picture's in this here, too.
you're a calendar, yeah. The face
I'm
of the calendar.
I'm Mr. October.
Oh, that's a good month.
So, and I've been involved for probably a really bad time, probably like 13 years, for sure. It's been like a long time. When I first heard about them, I started selling the calendars, and then slowly every year I just got more and more involved, started generating income, and it's a great program.
How did you hear about it?
Let me think. I think I saw a poster at the Carnegie Center way back in the day, and I saw them saying, "Do you want to earn some extra cash?"
Right.
And I went and went in for the training.
So you said, how long have you been involved again?
With 13 years.
13 years, and what's kind of driven you to get involved and?
Well, most people, it was just to generate the income to make the extra money on the cash on that side. But then the more I got more involved, I went to the meetings and seeing how great the project is, then I just got more involved because it's actually about like social change and helping people. And
right.
Yeah. So it just, you know, sucked me in.
And so why did you come down here to talk to us today as a part of the Homelessness Marathon?
Well, I said they phoned around, and then when they told us it was about like homelessness, poverty, and all these, like these three issues are all part of my life, so I'm for sure come down and talk about it.
And if you don't mind asking, how has your personal view on it, your own personal experience affected joining Megaphone?
How did my personal experience affect?
How is you said you have your own personal experience being homeless yourself. How did that affect wanting to be a part of Megaphone?
Oh, well, for sure. I said because back in the day, I guess I can only speak for myself, of course, right? But the main reason I was homeless is because of drug addiction. And then when you're a drug addict, all you're doing is looking for ways to get money. And then you go through different phases, right? So I didn't want to start. I hate stealing or robbing and crap like that, right? So to make like an honest living, it was through Megaphone. I was able to generate some income there to support my habit.
Nice. And how long have you been homeless for?
Well, during that time, it goes on and off, but the longest stretch was probably, I don't know, like 1 year. I guess it's really hard with me with time back then, but about that, probably like 1 year.
And are you from the downtown east side?
No. So what happened was originally when I first came out to Vancouver, like in 2000, I started living up on Commercial Drive.
Okay.
And then when I finally lost everything and all that, I still kind of stuck around on Commercial. But then eventually everybody in Vancouver, they all get pushed down east side. Like I used to sell drugs, of course, right? So when I got caught, they red zoned you from Commercial and they kick you out of all the other areas and literally they push you into the downtown east side. And this is where they pretty much want everybody to migrate to. Well, for now. The last couple of years, they seem to be reversing it and want to kick everybody out. So it's interesting.
And how has been living in the downtown east side? Has it been like a sense of community for
you? Yeah, for sure. When I first came down here, I was super depressed and I wasn't involved. But then joining all these other organizations and community, quite surprising. There's a huge community down here.
Right, and could you maybe inform us a bit more about, for people that don't know much about living in the downtown east side, is there anything that comes to mind about something that people don't think about or they don't consider about people living in the downtown east side?
Well, one thing, we're all super close, because down here, for most of us, most of us are living in those SROs, like single room occupancies, and it's they're super small rooms, and it's all like shared kitchens, shared bathrooms, and whatnot, so... So that's one thing too, is you have to, we're almost like all living amongst each other. And even when we go to the soup kitchens and this and that, so if you have to get along with everybody, if you don't, then you're just, you know.
Now, I guess on a much similar but serious note, a lot of people don't think about why people are stuck in homelessness. Why do you think, what reasons do you think there are that get overlooked the most?
They get overlooked. Oh, I think they all kind of know the reasons. They're just not really doing that much to change it. Like, pretty much it's just mental illness and drug addiction. And those are pretty much the two main reasons why people are homeless, especially in Canada, right? Like, if your mind's straight and whatnot, you could always get help and do this.
Right. So I guess before we end here, I guess in terms of, let's say... you have someone who might want to join Megaphone, become a vendor. Is there, what is kind of like your selling point to try to like convince them to get involved?
Oh, it's like one new word I'm probably learning down here is entrepreneurship, right? So yeah, you become your own boss. You literally buy the product and then resell it.
Right.
And you make your own hours. You throw in your own lines. You pretty much start being an entrepreneur.
That is awesome. So before we end here, was there anything else you wanted to let our listeners know as a part of the Homelessness Marathon, just in general?
And not really. I said just get more educated and learn more of the downtown east side and homelessness.
Awesome. Thank you so much for speaking with us today, Devin.
No problem.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Once again, you're listening to the Homelessness Marathon, broadcasting on CITR 101.9 FM on the unceded Coast Salish territory. My name is Una, and I am here with Duncan, who is going to regale us with his awesome stories of working in the downtown east side. And I'll maybe let you him introduce himself and what he does.
Thank you, Una. Duncan Higgin. I'm a project manager for the PHS Community Services, and I manage the sheltering units for this organization. So we bring online about 85 funded units of shelter on a nightly basis in the downtown east side, and really pride ourselves on trying to offer truly low barrier sheltering to a collection of people who in many regards are otherwise barred from many other sheltering environments. And so what that really demands is a real exploration of what are the barriers and limitations to having people being able to access shelter themselves.
So why did you decide to come down here and talk today? Why is this personal for you?
One, I'm very privileged to be in this space, and as you said, in this unceded Coast Salish land. More importantly, I'm really privileged to be amongst these individuals who have been previously speaking here and working for an amazing organization that offers truly meaningful labor to this group. So it's just a privilege to speak on an area that I'm very passionate about and a really underreported and little understood area of the really desperately marginalized populations of our country. I would like to say one other thing with the privilege of being here at Megaphone and whatnot. In any given setting within our structure, we're asked a lot of questions. The first question is often, what is your name? And we can all generally achieve that. But the very next question is often, what do you do? And that's a huge marker of self and of importance. And I think it's important that we mention here, with work like Megaphone and Hope in the Shadows, that we're giving and providing meaningful, authentic employment. So thank you for letting me share in here. Personally, I have witnessed the true depths of marginalization in the downtown east side through drug addiction, mental illness, but more importantly, the core elements there are often historical traumas, and those are understated elements that happen to individuals in their youth and elsewhere that we don't talk deeply about. And for me, that's an important element of the homeless conversation.
Thank you. I'm wondering what, you know, I'd say most people don't really think about homelessness or the barriers to housing that people face. And if you were to talk to the general public today, and folks who are able to listen from their cars or from inside their homes or from their streaming from their computers, what would you want to tell them to help them have an understanding of the kind of barriers that people are facing in the homelessness?
Yeah, that's a really big question, but I think some of the things we have to hit on here is this broken notion that somehow drug addiction and homelessness and marginalization are agential choices to commit illicit acts, and therefore the consequences of which are entirely the individuals alone to bear. So what I mean by that is that we often see and perceive in the general public or the more mainstream public when we're looking at addiction and homelessness, things of that nature, we see an individual who we claim had the agential choice to consume an illicit substance, and therefore the consequence is entirely theirs and theirs alone to bear. And I'd just like to elucidate the conversation a little further. You mentioned the individuals in cars. We know that 8 out of 10 car accidents are caused by speeding or distracted driving, an agential choice to commit an illicit act, but their consequences are never theirs alone to bear. And I think there's a big hypocrisy in that conversation. There's no one who goes to the hospital following a car accident asks, were you speeding? What happened? These natures and whatnot. But of course, when the addict or the marginalized arrive in hospital, he said, hey, have you considered not using drugs? And I think it's very important that we look at those hypocrisies, those unequal measurements and inequalities, allow us a different and more authentic perception of what the problems at hand are. The problems at hand often with the clients that I am serving, with the individuals who shelter at our projects, drug addiction and marginalization and alcohol consumption are not the problem at hand. They're simply a coping mechanism for previous historical traumas. And I think that's a very important element, even more so when we consider in often case those traumas happened to individuals when they were children, in their youth, things of that nature. And there's a doubling of victimization. We didn't support that individual when they were a child, not their fault, be it watching domestic abuse, be it sexual abuse, physical abandonment, whatever that might be. We didn't support that child in their youth, that was not their fault. And then they turn 18 and we say, pull your bootstraps up and get a job, which is a second form of victimization. And quite frankly, it's not the bootstraps that are broken. The bootstraps work just fine. It is the fact that we have abandoned people and then blame them again for their historical traumas. I find that very troublesome and worrisome.
So what I hear you saying is that people are not only blamed, but then they're put into two categories, the deserving and then the undeserving of the same services. So some people who follow a certain narrative are considered deserving, but those are folks who have access to different types of privileges that other people don't necessarily have access to. So they're, you know, insulated by those, by their privilege, whereas other folks don't necessarily have that and are put into the category of undeserving. And so no matter what they do, no matter how they try to access services, are labeled as such. That's what I hear you.
This is precisely in many regards, you know. We have two categories, and it actually goes a little deeper than that, but I agree in full. We have the category of the worthy homeless and the worthy of treatment and the unworthy. But we also have this cultural sociological framework of constantly trying to place people into the category of wolf or sheep or wolf or lamb. And what's most fascinating about that conversation is that we then in a general population look at the homeless in the downtown east side and often describe them as the wolf, as though somehow it was catchable and contagious, historical traumas, when in reality that population in many regards is the most lamb-like of our entire population. And these injustices of the worthy and deemed worthy of treatment or of pain management or whatever that might be is doubly so when we talk about dividing our populations into predator and predation.
I really liked how you stated that. We have about one more minute before we need to wrap up. So if you have any last thoughts, Duncan, I'd really love to hear what you have to say.
Well, first off, I think it's important that we're at least having this conversation and having the voices of the individuals who live in the homeless instead of my privileged position talking about this. And those are the voices that have to be heard, and forever and very long time are the least heard or understood, which means that the solutions are being created by individuals who don't live the life itself. And another thing that I like to say that I really think is important here, for a very long time, the bureaucratic structures and other structures that approach homelessness and the problem of homelessness and addiction have tried to create what were perceived as complex solutions to the notion of a very simple problem of homelessness. And we have to shift that paradigm, because what we need are very simple solutions, like the room we're in here, working with vendors, to the really complex problem of historical traumas.
Thank you so much. And thank you, everyone, for sharing today. Coming up now, we have CICK out of Smithers, British Columbia. They are going to be featuring a compilation of interviews with people who live on the street and the people who provide essential services to them. That'll be running from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific. Stay tuned to the stream at localfm.ca.